Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang podcast, episode 354. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hanging out down here in South Lakeville.
And Phil Wilson.
Nobody knows the trouble we've seen.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, for technical guys, we sure had a hell of a lot of technical difficulties this morning.
Although,
we're blaming Skype.
I think it's a Skype thing. Yep.
Yeah. They've been screwing around trying to make their web-based version and their business version and their Skype box for broadcasters to use and all that. It's like, just stop. Just focus on making it work.
I think Steve is very bitter about Microsoft's acquisition.
Oh my gosh.
on the plus side, it looks like Google Hangouts might be a good alternative.
It sounds much better.
Which we're on right now. I think there are some issues every once in a while, but we'll have a guest coming up and we'll see what that experience is having him join the call. Suppy Yu will be joining us from Fight in a Box. He's in the midst of a Kickstarter campaign for a board game.
Which looks really fun. But let's just talk real quickly about have a few stories to cover in Minnesota. The digital divide apparently is persisting in Minneapolis.
Of course it is.
Yeah. Well, so what are you doing about it, Phil? What's now that you're, officing in Minneapolis?
What am I doing about it?
Wait, doesn't Minneapolis have that municipal Wi-Fi network?
Yeah, from U.S. Internet.
Has anybody ever used that by any chance?
No, I have not.
Never used it. I've never been able to get onto it, so I've never had the opportunity.
I heard it's not great.
Give it a try. So.
Well, but also Comcast has a for folks who are low income, they have a, I think it's $10 a month for an internet connection. So
internet essentials.
Yeah. So there's that, and there's also, I know that CenturyLink has something with DSL. So I'm wondering why, you know, maybe $10 a month is just a deal killer. It's just still too much.
Well, is there a there's probably an install fee too on the front end of that, isn't there?
Probably.
There is, yeah, but it's not very expensive.
Yeah.
Okay. It may just not be available in some of these neighborhoods because it's not available on 100% of the footprint. But it looks like there's an education problem, too, where some of the people living in these lower income areas of the city don't really value an internet connection that highly.
There's that. But also what I find interesting is they didn't put anything in here about the number of people who are actually using smartphones as their primary computing device for email and everything else. And
here at the end of the story, it says cell phones might not be good enough to fill out job applications and such. And
exactly.
With the Chrome browser and, you know, they made a huge amounts of, you know, a progress there on the mobile side. I think you can do just about anything these days.
I think you can. I think it's just a matter of education and technology, you know, being in pace with, you know, phones. You know, it also varies, you know, your mobile experience is going to vary by platform. It's going to vary by model of phone. It's going to vary by, you know, the coverage areas. So, but I still think you're right, Steve. I don't think we're not necessarily taking into account the data usage in bridging that digital divide. So,
well, the other thing to remember is you can always go to your local public library, and most of them have, you know, 25 or 30 computers there that you can use.
And with fast internet access.
Yeah, and I think that's probably our biggest challenge is to make sure that all areas or all buildings that have anything to do with education have good solid Wi-Fi or internet capabilities and connectivity. Right. So, but it's interesting. And again, the digital divide is a constant, you know, conversation, which it should be. And I think that we'll slowly start chipping away at it.
So I was also interested in this Twin Cities being included in Obama's new tech training program. And I read a little bit about this, but this is at that Prime Digital Academy, the Nerderies group, right?
No, they're not. I think they were founded by the Nerdery. I think they're a separate entity from the Nerdery. So But they're right next to the Nerdery. But that said, I think it's a standalone by itself. So
interesting.
So yeah, you know, they've done a great job at Prime to establish their education system and their model based on a lot of grants from the state. They have an agreement with the state. They've done a lot to really ramp that thing up. I really think Prime's got a good thing going on. The question is, can their graduates find employment right out of the program? So
aren't app development and web developers, they're fairly high,
in demand. Yes, very much so. Very much so in demand. It's being able to find those outlets that will bring in a junior level developer and help mentor them and grow them. You know, that's always the challenge. So. But well, I think it's great that the folks at Prime are being able to tap into these sorts of things.
Yeah, the story does talk about other areas, other alternatives here in town that are also training IT people.
Yep.
So
is anybody going to the car show?
I was just going to ask that exact same question. Yes, we're going tomorrow, in fact.
You are going. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Well, right. Michelle's working on a project for a company in the automotive space. So
nice.
For color and so forth. And so we got to go down there for that. But I also, I'm kind of poking around looking at a new car, and I saw Julio's article, which you posted, Tim.
Yep.
That he
going to be in that electric room.
But electric cars get a room of their own at the Twin Cities Auto Show, and they have the $1 million Porsche 918 Spyder plug-in hybrid. And I'm thinking about getting a couple of those.
At least.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, replace your two Priuses with your Prius. You buy. With a 918, a couple of 918s.
Well, it goes from 0 to 60 in 2.2 seconds. So, I got to tell you, I hate the delays when I'm entering the freeway. So, I think I'm at 8.5 seconds to get up to 60.
I don't know.
If I can save 6 seconds, man.
I'm a little worried about keeping my CODs. Well, it's like, holy crap.
Oh, man. No kidding.
I want to check that BMW i3. I hear those are pretty good.
They are. Yeah. Yeah. And Ralph Jensen, he and we talked about his startup. He was one of the founders of GoFast.net with Mike O'Connor. And he's talked about, Julio talks about him in this article and how he... he felt kind of like a freak as truck owners gave the ubiquitous electric auto display blank, quizzical, or even scornful looks. But Jensen drives a BMW i3.
Interesting. Steve, what are you interested in picking up? What cars pique your curiosity? Are you staying with a hybrid model or an electric model?
I really like the Toyota Avalon, even though it's kind of an old man's car, but I really like the look of it, the comfort and all that. And then the hybrid version gets nearly what I get with the Prius. It's 40-44. And then Honda also with the new Accord, I don't think they're doing a hybrid for the 2016. And then the third option is actually the new Chevy Volt, but that won't be available here until 2017, early 2017. But boy, I'm reading some really good things about that. And based on the driving that I do, I could probably use electricity 90% of the time and just never use gas.
You could get one all electric plug-in car just for around town stuff, but I think you're going to need to have a hybrid for the times when you go on the road and drive up to the cabin or down.
Yeah, or if you're like me, I'm going on these photography adventures and I'm up in, Yosemite or Glacier or someplace like that in the middle of nowhere. I don't want to be an electric. But you know what? Just fun fact to know and tell. If you're interested in a Nissan Leaf, after the tax credit, these things are selling for, 15 to 20,000 used and with low mileage. I've seen some as low as like 2,100 miles that are selling for, 18,000-20,000 bucks. And they get about 110, which means in the winter with the electric heater running and all that, you're going to get 35 to 40. But, it's coming along. I'm not sure I would buy a pure electric car now because it's... things are going to change so much. So, but we'll see.
So it, you know, when you said that the Honda Accord Hybrid is not around for 2016, that made me worried a little bit because I have a 2015 Accord Hybrid,
yeah.
But it's back. It's coming back in 2017.
Right, right.
They say with a second generation hybrid system.
That's probably why the 2016 is not available, but also
right.
The price of gas has been so low that, you know, they're not, there's not a big incentive to roll out hybrids. And
well, I am a big fan of the Honda Accord Hybrid. So Steve, wait, if you can,
it's a good car.
It's a great car. I've had nothing but great success with it. I get close to 50 in the summer months, and it's average right around, I average right around 40 during the winter months.
And you're a tall guy. So that's gotta
and
be
I'm a tall guy. Yeah. You know, the seats aren't necessarily any better. I still very much miss the seats for my Volvo, but, you know, because they have a longer seat, but, I think you should wait. So there's my 2 cents. So what's happening on the national front? What stories are kind of out there? I was a little concerned about the ransomware, the Mac ransomware.
But it's
outbreak.
It's only right now inserted into an app called Transmission, which
I use. I mean,
well, and I've used it too, but fortunately, I didn't have that version.
I didn't either.
I
updated
because I haven't used Transmission for a while. But that was very disconcerting that it got signed and got released, and that was a problem.
So, what's the Transmission app do?
It's the BitTorrent app.
Yeah, it's a BitTorrent app. You download a torrent file, which is typically 20 to 40K. And double click it, opens up BitTorrent or Transmission, and then it goes out onto the network and looks up in the directories for how many peers, how many seeders, people are seeding the file, and how many people are just leeching it, you know, in other words, downloading it. And it'll connect up, and when those become available, it'll start putting the packets together for you. And in fairly short order, depending on the popularity of the file, you'll have it, and it'll be on your computer. Say, by the way, just a fun fact in Ointel, I think I might have mentioned this, that somebody, of course, we've had the same guest network password for like 8,000 years, but somebody used our guest password to download torrent files that were of a naughty nature.
Yeah.
And we got, I think I might have mentioned it to you guys personally, but we got 9 takedown notices from Comcast. And I've done some investigation, and it absolutely was not through our main network. So my son's off the hook, and I'm sure it wasn't my wife. If she was going to download a torrent file, it'd be Downton Abbey or something. But anyway,
really? Do you really think she could make that much money doing furniture design? Come on, really, seriously.
That's right. Anyway, but it's, you know, and I'm Mr. Security, so I try to stay on top of this stuff. That's why when I saw this malware article, I was like, oh no, come on, really? Because ransomware is the worst.
Yep.
You know, having all your files encrypted by some yahoos in Russia. But anyway, so another story. Tim, did you stick this in here about Facebook announces a WordPress plugin?
I did.
That lets publishers easily create instant articles. I had not seen this.
Yeah. No, it looks good. But it looks like you have to be more of a serious publisher than the three of us.
Okay. So if you're doing suggested posts, for example, on Facebook as a publisher, then you'd use something like this if you were driving your blogs, for example, with WordPress?
Perhaps, but it looks like you have to adhere to the policies of Facebook, and there's a review process. So it doesn't look like it's just as straightforward as, you know, firing up this plugin and it automatically posts your stuff to Facebook in this specific format, which they call instant articles.
Yeah.
So, but if you're a BuzzFeed, for instance, or someone, you know, like that.
And we use them. Yep.
This may be, you know, a new tool in your quiver.
There you go.
Yep.
Get on that, Phil.
Well, I mean, we found that, and there's a, I'll put a link to the posted in BuzzFeed, but there is really good evidence that using instant articles does give publishers just a bit of an edge. So we've had in this article or in this post that we talk about it, Oh, that's right, way back from June. So there was about a 2.5 times better than average interaction score with an instant article. So, but
so it's sort of the Facebook equivalent of SEO then for publishers?
I would imagine it's a little bit like that, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, it sounds like you get better engagement from the format somehow. Maybe it just makes the article look more attractive on Facebook.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, so you told us a little bit about this week's guest, Phil, at the outset. And before we bring him on, does he have a prototype of this game out that he's doing the Kickstarter campaign on?
As a matter of fact, he does. We can talk a little bit about that. It's called End of the Line. Why don't we go ahead and get Seppi online? Yeah. He's the chief designer and ogre at Fight in a Box. Currently, they're in the final days of a Kickstarter campaign for the board game End of the Line. So I originally met Seppi when he was marketing director at Magenic, and have kept in touch with Seppi. He's turned into a great friend. And I get a kick out of, the board game, the gaming space is very much tied to the world of tech. So, we've actually had Fight in a Box out to the BuzzFeed office to do a game night where we got to play this game. So let's get him on the line. And I'm going to try and figure out how to do that. So let me just go ahead and send it now.
Hello, Seppi.
Okay, there you go.
There you are. Hi, Seppi.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. How is it going for you?
The roller coaster ride that is the Kickstarter is the thing.
That's great. Well, so why don't you go ahead and just give us a brief rundown of the creation of Fight in a Box, which is the game company that you are founder of, co-founder of, CEO?
Co-founder. I'm chief game designer, but would be my official title.
Tell me I told everybody that you and I met originally when you were doing marketing work for the tech industry. So tell me about what got you into a game company, and then tell us a little bit about the Kickstarter campaign.
Well, before I go into my individual details, I have to ask, how nerdy are we? Because I tend to speak in super gamery or nerdy terms, and maybe I need to tone it down. Because normally when I start this discussion, I tell people that switching from being a marketing executive to being a game designer is like spraying your teeth with chrome and screaming, "Witness me," for your career.
There you go. Well, I will tell you that if my son was on right now, you guys would start to talk, and then Phil, Tim, and I would just sort of stand on the sidelines. So we're not gamers.
I get the Mad Max reference.
Okay.
See Fury Road. That's it. See? There you go. Thanks, Phil.
Don't worry. I'm there for you.
All right. I've been writing games for a very long time, I guess it's 3 decades or more. Yeah. 3 decades or more. And so, the economic downturn happened, and I was pretty successful doing what I was doing, generating revenue for software as a service company. But I really was like, maybe I need to still do this thing. And so my business partners and I were playing the games that I was writing, and they were like, Seppi, you should publish this. And I'm like, huh. I never thought about that. I just thought this is a thing that I did. And so we did start doing regular play testing, and then worked up a sort of a business plan for how we wanted to get to our current game that we're kickstarting, which is called End of the Line. Does that answer your question, Phil?
Sure it does. So End of the Line is a post-apocalyptic family survival game. So I think I'd be remiss in not saying that End of the Line was also sort of in production with your other game, which I enjoy greatly, Squirrel or Die. So they tend to be rather dark themes, Seth.
It's true. My company's name is Fight in a Box.
Yep.
So, you open this box up, and then your whole family will then be sucked into this vortex of fun chaos. Yeah, that's sort of the nature of the games. The official type of games that we like to write are a little bit Take That is the actual title.
Okay.
For the kinds of games that we make.
Gotcha.
Your next game is going to be called Trump Event?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's funny that you mentioned it. Since Donald Trump is running for president, we decided we're going to launch our game about the world ending on President's Day. Ooh, so everybody got used to the idea. So that's why our Kickstarter has been going since February 15th. And we're on our final days.
Yeah, you're close. You're really close.
Yeah, it's so scary. That's great.
Well, Seppi, you're going to make this happen. I know you are. You're $1,500 shy of the $21,000 goal. So you're gonna nail this, man. That's great.
I don't think it's a I thing. How much crowdfunding have you done, Phil?
None.
Crowdfunding?
Well, no, I've asked my parents for money in the past, but other than that,
Family funding. Crowdfunding is like the most humbling experience that you could ever go through. And I mean, I was raised Catholic. You realize that you really can't do anything yourself. And it is really sort of the community and your fans that make things happen.
Right.
People who support your crowdfunding effort really come into two categories, and you want them to overlap, but they really are Group A, which is sort of your launch pad, and your rock, which are people who believe in you. Mm-hmm. And then Group B, which is the group that you need to grow, and you need to move people into both Group A and B, which are people who love what you do. And so being a tiny company, you know, we start with the A's to get enough people to be on board to become B's. Does that make sense?
Certainly.
Yeah.
Certainly. Well, tell us a little bit about the process of the Kickstarter campaign. And again, you don't necessarily need to dwell for hours by any means. I know you could talk about it for hours, but Seppi, give us a sort of an overview of what the process was for you guys to get this rolling.
First, you should have a plan, and then you should, you know, yeah, I mean, you'd be surprised. People just
really?
Like,
okay.
Yeah, they go, hey, I'm just going to put this on Kickstarter and what's going to happen. And then, no, you should really have a plan. And that plan should include community building and realistic ideas of how much funds you need and how many people that you need to make that happen. So for us, we actually had a series of products that we were going to make until getting to progressively sort of more involved, building our community as we go. The very first one was Squirrel or Die, which was an indie publish so that we could do it ourselves. Our friends on Muse on Minis helped us produce it, and that's all in Iowa, and that was local. And that ended up being something that we could do to take us to conventions. And then we sold Squirrel or Die at conventions to pay for the going to conventions effort.
You mean like Comic-Con and stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. Like locally, that would be Con of the North and Convergence, those kinds of places. Yep. Comic-Con is obviously the big national geek thing that most people will know. But then, you know, there's even bigger shows like Gen Con and so forth and whatnot. And so for us, since conventioneers are sort of like the harbinger of cool games for their various groups – and gamers are extremely tribal. They work in like different niches, and they don't all necessarily interact with each other just because they're gamers. But conventions is one of those places where you can get them all together, and their most vocal components tended to go to those places. So if you can go and enlist those people, that helps you a lot on your primary effort for any kind of crowdfunding is community building.
Go ahead.
No, absolutely.
I was just going to ask. And so again, because I have a son who I took to Comic-Con San Diego for his high school graduation present, which
you are an awesome dad. I just thought,
well, man, was it tough to get tickets, but, you know, I was kind of lukewarm on the whole thing and I absolutely loved it. But anyway, that's another whole story. But one of the things that, he started watching, I don't know, 2-3 years ago was Tabletop with Will Wheaton and Felicia Day.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you have had an opportunity, or maybe it's too early, to try to get the game on there and get these guys to play it or review it or anything.
Absolutely. There's a hierarchy for media nerds. Chris Hardwick and Will Wheaton and Felicia Day are all sort of at that very top tier. Chris Cluey sort of in that group. they're all sort of like uber nerds that everyone loves for good reason. I'm trying to build up to there. One of the big podcasts for gaming is called D6 Generation. And we got onto there, which is awesome. Those guys have been super, super helpful. They have 30,000 listeners. So, yeah.
Wow.
You've now reached 30,003 with podcasts. That's right. This is great.
Nice job. I'm thinking in all seriousness that you should position this for the holiday season at target mom and dads to say, look, the zombie apocalypse or something akin to that is going to happen. So you need to teach your children
the Trump apocalypse. Sets. Yeah, easily. Yeah.
So that they're able to save themselves.
The survivalist people actually picked up my tweets. I was so awesome.
You're kidding.
No, 300,000. 300,000 people who follow this one survivalist guy. I was tickled pink. I'm like, yes, this is a fun way to teach people about the end times. And, and they were pretty good sports about it. We loved having their support. The deal is that, people now, unlike people when we were growing up with like the Cold War, it wasn't about when the end of the world or if the world end of the world was going to happen. It was a when, because the nuclear, annihilation wasn't guaranteed by everybody. But now we've sort of switched on that,
That's great.
Great. Man, this is good. So how many days left, Seppi, and make your
It is 4 days left from whatever, today's Saturday, and then the 48-hour reminder emails come out on Monday morning. So Tuesday's really the last day. Tuesday's really the last day.
Well, check it out. It really is a great game to play. There is a learning curve on it, but once you learn it, we had a great time with it, Seppi. So, and again, I think part of the support is also a copy of Squirrel or Die, right? Do you get a Squirrel or Die opportunity there too?
Yeah, you can get. We were making a radioactive green sort of Fallout-y version of Squirrel or Die for the Kickstarter people who want that. So that's a special item that you can't get after the Kickstarter.
$25.
It is $25. Yeah, and we can't thank the local community enough. I mean, if you guys have been to like the Source in Roseville, or if you've been to Level Up Games in South St. Paul, or Tower Games here in Minneapolis, these are all places that have supported us through this whole thing. Local gamers have made this happen. It's pretty incredible.
That's great.
Very nice. So, Seppi, once you get to that level of, Milton, Bradley, and Yoon, what's the next game?
Well, this is going to seem more ridiculous for you guys, but ask the nerds in your lives. My next game is called Conquest Princess Pew Pew Pew. Okay. It's about using fashion to overcome galactic tyranny.
Pew, pew, pew.
Pew, pew, pew. It's really, despite how terrible Zoolander 2 was, it is Star Wars meets Zoolander.
Ah, there you go.
Do you guys remember the old Jane Fonda movie, Barbarella?
Barbarella, sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Barbarella, she like takes all her clothes off during the credits, and she has 13 plus costume changes during that movie. And I thought it would be a hysterical thing to do a game where people, as an integral part of them throwing evil tyrannical regimes on planets far away, had to change their clothes to do it. So
that's like a plan. Right.
That is the plan. I love Conquest Princess. Just so you know, like End of the Line is a 5-year project,
right?
And Conquest Princess is now on a year in development.
Okay.
So these projects are pretty serious.
Well, I think it's great. I look forward to the success of this bad boy, and I'm glad you had a chance to join us and tell us a little bit about it.
Absolutely. And if anybody has questions about kickstarting or crowdfunding, or nonprofits come and ask me for marketing advice about things I do, and I put my grown-up clothes back on in a very Conquest Princess-y sort of way, and go help them out, like Missing Children Minnesota, for example. Friend us on Facebook or message me. I love helping out local people, and The people at Twin Cities have helped us so much to get as far as we have.
Outstanding. Seppi, thanks for joining.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys have a good morning.
You too.
Thank you. Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
What a fun project.
It really is. And I got to tell you, the game is a hoot. We had a great time playing it. And, you know, just the fact that if you have the opportunity or need some sort of marketing help, I don't think you could do better than a guy like Seppi. He is a brilliant marketer. So, but Conquest Princess Pew Pew Pew. Sure. Why not? Sure. Let's talk a little bit about the cool thing. Oh, the week.
Yeah. So Phil, you should start.
Yes. Well, I thought, you know, this isn't a thing. It was an event. I thought that the keynote speech or the keynote interview from President Barack Obama at South by Southwest was worth taking a look at. And if at the very least following up on, I thought that, you know, I think the guy is a brilliant speaker, but also has a great sense of humor and really works very well in a room that's really kind of was very much more casual than your average State of the Union address.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
Oh, would you listen to you?
Yeah. What did he talk about? He talked about basically how the government needs the back door, basically.
Well,
there needs to be a balance between security and privacy. And,
right.
And you know, so between encryption and having a key. And so essentially he's pushing for a key, and his threat, it wasn't really a threat, but his admonishment was all about, look, tech industry, if you don't do it, there's going to be another event potentially, and Congress will rapidly pass something. And he was alluding to the Patriot Act, which was rushed through right after 9/11, which flung open the doors to the NSA for all the Snowden revelation stuff and all that. So I thought it was a little disconcerting.
Well, is it something that I'm a fan of? No, not at all. I guess the reason that I pick it as a cool thing of the week is here's a sitting president that actually faces it head on. I mean,
right,
I don't
exactly
think anybody in that role can have, and I think he mentioned this too in the discussion, to have an absolutist view is, you know, especially for a sitting president, is impossible. You know, it's hard to have an absolutist view, but this doesn't change my desire for no back door in anything, but I can tell you that I thought it was a cool thing simply because he faced the question. And I think that also there was a great deal of emphasis put on making government work better through technology. And that's not just, you know, that's over and above the concept of access to private data, but, you know, being able to motivate people to, vote, to actually become involved in the government process. I think that is
the educational technology and stuff.
No,
it was a great call to action. Question.
So that was my cool thing of the week. But no, I haven't changed my mind. Have you, Steve?
Yeah, not a chance.
Because I don't think you were clear when you mentioned it.
So all the dinging you're hearing, everyone, is the fact that we have pretty much abandoned Skype and are now doing a Google Hangout. And so Seppi joined again to send us a link.
Yep.
And Tim, tell us about your cool thing, buddy.
So this is one that was, I think, a week or two ago. It was in the rundown, but we didn't get to it. And it's some software from a company called Neverware, and it's called Cloud Ready. And it basically takes your old obsolete laptop or desktop and turns it into a Chromebook. It's free for an individual, but if you're a school or a larger organization, they charge for extended services like consoles, like what you would have if you're managing a bunch of Chromebooks. But I thought it was a unique idea. It looks like it's pretty simple to install, and then after it's installed, it acts exactly like a Chromebook does.
And what a great way to give new life to old machines.
Absolutely. I could see that if you added, say, an old MacBook, one of those white or black ones, you could put this on there, give it to any kid, and it would be perfectly usable for their schoolwork.
Absolutely. All right. So my cool thing was an article in Mac Rumors about Intel's upcoming ultra-fast Optane SSD. And essentially what they've done is, you know, they also did this same sort of proof of concept with, you know, SSD to begin with, right? So a lot of people are saying, well, it's just a technology preview and all of that. It's like, no, this thing is fully baked, and it'll probably start hitting machines in 2017. But essentially what it is, it's a new memory-based storage technology called 3D XPoint, and it's 1,000 times faster and more durable than the NAND flash storage, which is used in current SSDs. And it's also 10 times denser than the DRAM chips. And what's interesting is just scroll down and look at the comments. We'll put a link in the show notes. And people are saying, you know, where this is really going to play well is with phones.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Because
then you can put the OS and you can put everything on there. And so, you know, just put a big drive on there and you're good to go.
But will that affect battery life of the phone if you did stick an SSD into it?
I don't know.
That would be the only downside, because I think that flash RAM it consumes a lot less power than any, you know, any other kind of drive.
Yeah,
that may be a drawback to it, but
could be. Yeah,
yeah, you never know. But it'll be good for laptops, that's for sure.
All right. Well, upcoming events. What?
Our cool thing of the week was a little stodgy this week.
Yeah.
Don't you think that was a little stodgy?
No.
Could somebody do a Darth Vader waffle iron or something next week? Just so
holodeck.
We can.
Holodeck. I just want a holodeck.
Okay. There's the quarterly mention of a holodeck from Steve. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much.
All right. I'll try to do better.
Okay. Well, the only thing I want to mention about our upcoming IoT Fuse conference is on Monday, we'll be sending out an email to all those who have signed up at iotfuse.com. And so you might want to go sign up if you haven't. And we'll be sending out a press release and so forth. And so we're getting close.
Okay.
April 22nd. And so we'll talk about stuff like that and other stuff that is related to technology next week on
the Minivate Gang podcast.
All righty.
Have a good week.
The gypsy woman told my mother before I was born, you got a boy child coming. Gonna be a son of a gun. Gonna make pretty women jump and shout. Then the world wanna know what this all about. But you know I'm here. Everybody knows I'm here.
to say. Give up on me for good luck. And that you see, I got $700. Don't you mess with me, but you know what it is. Well, you know, I'm the hoochie coochie man, and the whole round world know I'm here.
We're gathering ourselves together, our Heavenly Father, asking you to let your Holy Spirit revive with each and every fine soul. And asking you, our Heavenly Father, to have mercy upon us.